I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 609. It's a red letter day when Ninja spoils something and Panda doesn't.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
Girl, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I've had breakfast. I've had coffee. I'm like super chill.
That's because
I'm winning the game.
That is super good. I'm happy for you.
I'm happy for me, too. But I digress. Actually, I just paused. I didn't digress. But now I'm digressing. That's what I'm doing right now. This is my digress. I have now digressed. So we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Got a little anime stuff to talk about. Got some game stuff to talk about, which will be a very full episode, I think. Hopefully, it'll be a bunch of fun. I do want to jump off right out of the gate. I got to talk about nerdy apparel for a hot second.
Okay.
So, there are a lot of brands out there, and there are a lot of places that you can get shirts that, you know, people are designing things that are nerd-related, you know, nerd culture-related, not necessarily licensed and things like that. And sometimes it's hard to tell, like, where you can get, like, good stuff from that, you know, is going to be reliable, and also your money is going to go someplace where you expect it to go, and you're not going to get all of a sudden charge hundreds of dollars for something from somebody offshore and never get your money back because fraud is out there, so you got to be real careful. You know, I tend to get a lot of my apparel because people ask me, like, where'd you get that shirt? Where'd you get that bag? Blah, 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 blah. And I tend to shop at some of the, you know, I would say usual suspects. So a lot of the stuff that I get is from Teespring or from ThinkGeek. And of late, I have become super, super enamored with Muster Brand.
Okay.
I've also gotten a couple things from Insert Coin. It's a little difficult to get things from Insert Coin because Insert Coin is UK-based. So a lot of times, like, trying to make purchases with my debit card or with my credit card, they usually get flagged. Like, did you try to make this purchase? Because it's
from
outside of the country.
They're just trying to make sure that no one's stealing your shit.
And trust and believe, like, I appreciate every time they were like, hey, can you verify that you were trying to make this charge? Otherwise, we won't let it through. And I'm like, thank you. I am, in fact, trying to make this charge. And then sometimes they'll still come back, mostly with, like, my debit card, my credit union. They're like, yeah, we actually still don't trust it, though, so we're not going to let that through. I'm like, God damn it. I just want the hoodie.
What? Once again, they're just being safe, bro.
I know they're being safe, and I appreciate them protecting me from, you know, the fraudsters. Because there's fraudsters out there. But as I said, I've recently become extremely infatuated with Muster Brand. So I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but Muster Brand makes some super high quality licensed apparel. And I say apparel because it's not just like t-shirts and sweatshirts. They do a lot of custom pieces. So cardigans, jackets, like all weather jackets, really heavy sweaters, hoodies, neck mufflers, like it's ridiculous the amount of stuff that they make, and it's all very much, I think, gorgeous looking apparel pieces of content. I actually have a sweater that I got 2 years ago at a PAX East that's a Muster Brand sweater that I absolutely love. Like, this thing, it's ridiculous. Like, I paid a pretty penny for it, and that's the thing I will say about Muster Brand is that it is high quality, and therefore you're going to pay high quality prices. So I bought this sweater for about $115. And I believe at the time, Panda was like, what did you just do? But I lived in that sweater for 2 days. And I, as soon as I put it upon my body, no cold entered any place the sweater touched. Places outside of where the sweater went were still cold. Because that was the PAX East where we got snow during PAX East while we were there. So it was like below zero. And I had not come with below zero apparel, even though I live in Massachusetts. So I should know how cold it's going to be. And also, I have plenty of electronic devices that would allow me to go and look and see what the weather is going to be forecasted, like in the future. But I didn't do that. So I had to buy some stuff to keep me warm. And after I got that sweater, I pretty much lived in it for like the next 3 weeks. Like anytime you saw me, I had that sweater on top of my clothes. Like my poor husband got tired of having to wash it as often as he did because I just lived in the thing. And that's when I really became like aware of the brand because I really hadn't heard of them before that. And I do want to go on record as saying Mustard Brand is not sponsoring any of this. They don't even know that I'm talking about them. These are just my honest opinions and experiences that I've had. But I really have come to appreciate the quality of the content that they make. There are quite a few pieces that they currently have right now that I absolutely want. They have a gorgeous run of stuff. And I say that it's, you know, around nerddom because it's not just game focused. They have, you know, some Game of Thrones stuff that they do. They have some Star Wars stuff. Their Star Wars line is fantastic. They do Marvel superhero pieces. So they have a couple of the, I call them asymmetric zip hoodies that I really like because they're not just, you know, a straight zip right up and down your middle. They're off center, but they're designed really well. Some of the designs are super simple, so you could wear it to work and not be like, blatantly like, I'm a fan of video games and I'm a fan of superheroes. But at the same time, like people who know would recognize, which I like. I like the subtle stuff as well as just like the blatant stuff. But they've got quite a few lines. And one of the things that like I am seriously eyeballing right now, and I gotta wait till I get my money back up. But they have this gorgeous Leia Organa sweater. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, asymmetric and made of really high quality stuff. And it's just a simple cream thing with very subtle pieces, very reminiscent of Leia's gown that she wore in.
Oh my God, I could totally envision you wearing this thing. Like,
right? Like it speaks to my soul.
Like, the price doesn't. You would be like a cool, like, General Organa. Like, serious. You know, a POC serious. One with, like, instead of, like, the buns on the side legit. Of your head with, like, a braided afro faux hawk.
Do you understand? Like, if I had been invited to a Halloween party this year, that's probably what I would have done. Like, I'm just to be legit. Like, I just would have braided my faux hawk and just been like, General Organa.
I would have invited you to my in-laws party, but I also love you and didn't want to subject you to that.
You also love me and know that on a cold, cold night, I'm not driving up to Maine.
Oh, right, exactly. So I was like, you know what?
To drive back to my home in Massachusetts.
We only need one of us disappearing in Stephen King territory. We don't need both of us lost up there.
Correct. There should really only be one of us at any given time in Maine.
So.
Just to ensure that the bloodline continues.
Exactly. So.
But I really like the quality of product that Mustard Brand does. So, you know, a lot of times, especially around con times or coming out of con times, you know, that's really where more times than not people are able to find apparel, you know, for their fandoms. And they're not exactly sure where they can look and where they can trust to find that kind of stuff outside. Like, I know people that come to PAX East specifically just to shop the Merchant Rows to find various games for various platforms and to find apparel, you know, knickknacks, you know, that are branded with the fandom stuff that they love. And I'm just sharing with you guys, I am enamored with Mustard Brand. I love the quality of their stuff. If you're looking for some really, I would say, not so much your throwaway apparel. Like, to me, t-shirts are kind of throwaway apparel, right? You know, you wash them a few times, they start to fade. Then, you know, like with anything else, they start developing holes. You start dropping stuff on them. Eventually, you're like, I can get a new t-shirt. But if you're looking for some good signature pieces, you know, stuff that's going to last you a few years, that's higher quality and also reps your fandom, I would highly recommend that you check out Mustard Brand. They do have a U.S. store. So that's the other thing that I like about them is they are UK-based, but they have a U.S. store. So you're not having to go through kind of the customs purchase process and wait time and things like that, which is super nice for sure. So mustardbrand.us is the website for the U.S. store. You can check out just all their apparel flat out, or you can specifically shop by fandom. So if you just want to see what they're doing for Marvel stuff, like they have a great Black Panther cardigan that I also like.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, it's a 3/4 length cardigan, so it's, you know, down
ooh,
to
that, yeah, that
the knee.
I could,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, they've got really nice stuff. It's not just your typical, here's your tee, here's your pullover sweatshirt, here's your zip-up hoodie, here's your hat, and maybe here's a bandana or a mouse pad. It's okay, great. Here's your bomber jacket. Here's your winter jacket. You know, they've got stuff for Portal 2, so they've got a bunch of Aperture Science stuff, both fitted for ladies and for men. Their sizes for many of their things on the men's side go up to 4X. Some products obviously don't, but the majority of their shirts and jackets go up to 4X on the men's side. On the women's side, many of their things go up to 3X, so they're pretty well size inclusive. I will say that their fitted stuff is fitted, so if you got the curves, you might want to get a size up if you were lady,
okay,
and you're getting them them fitted things.
If you are a
ladies.
Coke bottle, consider your Coke bottle curves.
Correct. You know, love your curves. Be good to your curves. Don't be like, oh, I got this jacket, but I got to wear my shapewear to get into it. Don't do that to yourself. That messes with your psyche.
Okay.
But really great stuff, and I absolutely love it. And I will definitely be getting the Leia Organa sweater when I get all level and my money's up, because that's going to be like a Christmas present to myself.
Merry Christmas to
me. Merry Christmas, Ninja.
This year, not going to be ass off, even if I'm in space.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you don't need to be cold in space.
I mean,
space, you do that to
space
yourself.
Itself is a cold vacuum, so I mean,
it is a cold vacuum, but you don't have to be cold in the vacuum.
I mean, can you actually
that's
make
what I'm saying.
Heat in space?
I don't know. I mean, I figure that astronauts are doing something because they stay up in a space station for a while, so it's got to be somewhat climate controlled.
I mean,
because the human body itself and just the natural coldness of space would not survive.
I mean, you can't go out in space without a spacesuit because there's no oxygen.
Right. But you're also in a space station, and so cold affects, you know, the body of the space station. So there must be some kind of warming element inside the space station because people aren't wearing the spacesuits in the space station.
Right.
So there's got to be some
maybe
kind of warming element in there.
I mean, I
so that
I worry
they
about
could be running around. Space. Like, every time I see astronauts in space, inside
like, they got on their flight suit, they got their jumpsuit.
Yeah. They got their arms showing and shit.
So water droplets, which actually,
right,
like, I find, like, the coolest thing, but also the most terrifying thing, because, like, I know that you have to, like, train to be, like, an astronaut, because you, like,
you
just can't go up in space, because,
yeah,
you know,
you can't be like, hey, yo, Mr. Branson, I want to take a trip in space.
It's like, did your mom sign the permission? Nah, my mom didn't sign the permission slip, but I want to go to space.
Where we going? We don't need permission slips.
Yeah, but if you throw up in space, because, you know, liquid and shit, like, it doesn't
you know,
come
it's
out
like
of
one of those things of
die.
Like, it's the video that plays, like, when you're in a plane and they're running through all the safety precautions and nobody pays attention to that. You really need to pay attention to that video when you're going into space. Like,
yeah.
You got to be aware of some things. It's not just about buckling your seatbelt. Although you should really buckle that seatbelt.
I mean, you know, you are breaking, you know, gravity barriers to get even
yeah.
out
so
of
so you should really
Earth.
Pay attention to
the
pre-flight
the
video. Because, you know, like, you know, between SpaceX and, like, Branson's thing, like, you know, they're trying to make commercially accessible travel to space. And I'm just like, think of all the people who act stupid on flights right now. Like, there's the pre-flight video that tells you about where the emergency exits are and, like, where your life jacket is in case we go into water and how to oxygen mask drop and how to take care of yourself and how to put your seatbelt on and not to move around when the captain's turning on the fast seatbelt sign. And how many people ignore that? All that stuff, every time. Can you imagine, like, people commercially getting on things like, we're going to space, and then they're like, we have a short little video that you need to watch before we go, and everyone's just like, eh, it's just like, luckily my seatbelt, fuck it.
Not me, because I do not want
I'll be taking notes. I'll have, like, my voice recorder on my phone. I'm like, I'm just getting all this so I can listen to it back when this is done, because I want to make sure that I have, like, crossed every single T and dotted every single I so that I can survive breaking through our atmosphere and also survive re-entering it. Because re-entry is a bitch.
I mean, I have a natural fear of, you know, planes, so I can only imagine how terrified I will be if I ever
I can't imagine you going on a space shuttle. I just can't imagine it. Like, unless the planet was doomed, and even then, I can kind of see you, like, really up until the last minute arguing, but what if it doesn't, like, completely, just hear me out,
like,
get destroyed? Like, I could just be here, and I could be, I'm willing to be the person to test and tell you guys, like, if it ended up being okay.
I remember history where shuttles blew up before they even, like, took off. Like, how secure is this shuttle right now? Because, you know, like, planes, there's only 2 points. Like, actually, it really would only be 1 point that I'd be worried about. And that's obviously the initial, like, we got to thrust to a certain speed to break, you know, through the gravitational pull of wherever we at.
I got so many points that I'm worrying about here on this trip. I know we're on a heavy tangent, but just deal with this for a second.
I got so many concerns. Scientific discussion on
the
show.
Well, the only reason why I'm bringing it up is because, you know, Richard Branson, like, last week said that he's, like, weeks away from having space travel, you know, on a consumer level ready to go and to start flying people into space. Now, Branson's not.
Where is it even to go in space? Is there a GameStop up there?
No,
is there anything
there's no
really worth
it's just
my
like
time
it's just like hey
right
rookie
now?
Atmosphere. Now you're in space. Cool, have a beverage. Okay, great. Now we're gonna go back to Earth. But like, I have so many points of concern. I'm concerned about reaching the terminal velocity to, like, you know, break the atmosphere. I'm worried about making sure that, like, you know, separation happens correctly, because that's where you could have a fuck up.
That's where things blow up and people die.
I'm worried about just generally things blowing up. I'm worried about people getting sick. At the point where we've broken atmosphere, so gravity is just, you know, not as strong. Therefore, their vomit is now just flying about the cabin, and I'm strapped in and can't move and have a wall of vomit coming in my direction.
Yes.
I'm worried about, okay, now we're out in space. Let's say everything's going great. Did we, in fact, actually equip this commercial vehicle correctly with enough oxygen for everybody on board? Just in case, like, something bad happens, do we have contingency plans? Okay, re-entry. Now, I've watched a lot of space flight things happen. I have friends that work at NASA that have launched satellites and, you know, guide missions back home. And let me tell you, reentry is a motherfucker, okay? And I'm just like, I don't know if I want to go through that. So then I have all my reentry issue questions and points of concerns. Ultimately, what ends up happening is, like, while it sounds like a great deal, I'm gonna keep my ass here on Earth, because better the devil I know than the devil
right.
I don't.
Uh-huh. Preach.
And that's a more you know from Ninja Sista.
The more you know.
But now that we're done with talking about space travel, commercial space travel, let me be more specific, I want to jump in and talk about some anime stuff.
Okay.
And then I'm going to let you talk some game stuff, and then I'm going to talk some game stuff, and then, like, we're going to have, like, a great time. So, we've talked about the Castlevania series on Netflix before, the first season, which was awesome. I think that the Netflix team did a fantastic job. The only complaint, as I recall, that both you and I shared about it was that it was too fucking short. Because there's only 4 episodes.
Well, I mean, I think when it came out, they were really... Like, I don't think Netflix was really sure how they wanted to approach anime.
I think it was just a tester. You know, Netflix throws a quite a bit of money at people to create original content.
I think it was hitting its stride with its, like, original content. With, you know what, if we're going to jump into anime, one, it's got to be something really big that draws in people, and we have to be 100% sure we are ready for what this is going to mean.
I would agree with that, other than they had already had a bunch of original content anime that was out there. I think that this was just another one where they were like, hey, this is a project you want to do. We think it's a good project. We think it's a good partnership. You've got, you know, your licenses in check so you can actually do this. So we're going to give you enough money for 4 episodes. And hey, if it turns out to be popular, then we can renegotiate for another season and, you know, more episodes. And if it doesn't, well, hey, we got this 4-banger out. I think that's what the approach to the deal was. Wasn't necessarily that they weren't sure that anime worked, because one of the biggest things that get watched on Netflix, even when they had, you know, the dialed down library, when Funimation took their licenses and their content back heavily, like, that was one of the big things that was sought out on the platform. So that's why they started making things like Ajin and Ido and Knights of Cydonia,
yeah,
you know, as original pieces.
Like,
because Cydonia was out, both seasons of Cydonia were out before the Castlevania first season.
Yeah, but I remember when, like, those first sprinkles were coming out, and, like, the anime boards that I sit on, and I sit on some, quiet. Because I know I'm an old-fashioned otaku who has to have a certain thing, and, you know, and I try very hard.
I appreciate your honesty in recognizing your old-school otaku-ness.
I'm trying to expand myself and let the kids on my lawn, because sometimes they bring me something really interesting and I go, oh, okay. And then sometimes I'm like, those kids are crazy, get off my lawn, and then they leave. And it's this to and fro kind of thing. But I mean, I remember when those first few originals were coming out, and one of the threads I was on was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about it. And mm-hmm. even I was like, I gotta wait for some reviews to come out, you know, and granted the reviews were favorable. And then I think that's when I decided I jumped into Ajin. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, okay, you got me. You got me here. But then when Castlevania came out, at first I was like, I don't know if I'm ready, because like Ajin, I think they nailed it. Like, I thought that was great, but I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, this has a much bigger following. Like, this has, like...
There's an already established deep lore and fandom.
Exactly. And if they even slightly, and I mean, and we've seen this happen, where someone got their hands on a property and they fucked it up.
Yep.
So I was like, and I stayed away from it forever, and it wasn't until a friend of mine who lives literally, like, two towns over wanted to come over with his girlfriend and watch it with us. And I'm like, if we're going down, we're going down together, brah. And all four of us sat in my living room with popcorn and were actually, like, impressed. Walking, and, like, after the fourth episode, I'm like, that's fucking it? Really? Just this shit was getting good? Just when I brought out the nachos?
Right, kind of scenario. Right. So, I mean, so for those who haven't watched Castlevania,
you should.
On Netflix,
it's only four episodes. Well,
season two is out, so I'm going to talk about season two. But the Castlevania anime on Netflix, it's, first of all, it's based on Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse. So if you are a Castlevania fan, because there are tons of Castlevania games, it's best to understand that this anime is set following Trevor Belmont. It's all around ending Dracula, basically.
When isn't it about ending Dracula? Someone's always got a gripe.
I mean, boy, does it have to? Okay, so anyway, what is interesting is that there are four episodes, like we said, in the first series. And basically, you get this backstory of Dracula being Dracula, you know, killing shits left and right. Just, you know, as he encounters humans, destroying them because, you know, fuck humans. And he actually encounters this woman that changes his mind a bit. And she seeks him out because she's trying to learn the old sciences that she knows Dracula is aware of because he's been around forever, and because she wants to become a better doctor. And so he's kind of taken aback that, you know, this human would come seeking him out, doesn't seem to be scared of him. Ultimately, he ends up falling in love with her, so his opinions, you know, a little bit start to change, and she challenges him, and she's like, look, I'm not the only one out in the world, the only human out in the world like this. I want you to go out and just, like, just be amongst people. Try not to kill people, but just experience them and experience what humanity has become since you pulled yourself away from it. While he's out doing this exploration that his wife has asked for.
The local town nearby is like, you a witch, you be shacking up with some evil, which makes you evil. We got to kill you.
Right. And so she's burned at the stake by the leader of the church in Wallachia for being a witch. And she isn't even trying to defend whether she's a witch or not. She's like, look, seriously, don't kill me. Because when my husband comes back and finds out that you've killed me, you're all going to die.
You're all fucked.
And you're going to die. Like, I don't care that you're breaking this stuff up. Like, you know, put me in prison or do what you need to do to me. But don't kill me, because he will kill all of humanity. And the archbishop, or I think he's the archbishop of the thing, is like, you will not threaten me with your bullshit or your, like, curses, whatever. burns down her house.
Burns her.
Burns the bitch on the stake. Dracula comes home, finds out, and is like, okay, well, then that's it. I'm destroying all of humanity. And looses thousands upon thousands of hell demons and spawns, contacts all of his fucking generals, and just starts weighing laced.
Yeah. She warned you, dude.
Laying waste. There we go.
Like, she wasn't even trying to, like, you know, avoid any type of punishment. She was just like, I'm doing this for you. Lock me up. Sure. Starve me if you have to. Hit me. But, like,
I mean, just don't kill me.
You know, I'm telling you what happens. There's a failsafe, and if I die, like in Saw, like, a bomb's going off, and you all going down. I'm just telling you for your benefit.
And they killed her. And then, like, the Pope comes to the city a little while later and is like, hey, look, you know, everybody said that all this shit was going down and we got rid of all the witches and, like, it's all prosperous because it's God's will and that's why the sun is shining in Wallachia. And then all of a sudden the sky's filled with red and there's demons everywhere and they're ripping people in half and eating their intestines and it's raining blood. And everyone's like, oh, no. And then Dracula appears and he's like, oh, yeah. And begins to just decimate humanity. And then we're introduced to Trevor Belmont, who is drunk.
Yep.
And is like, well, I could kill some vampires. He gets his stuff stolen, so he gets into a bar fight, meets a couple of other characters.
Well, I mean, I think he's actively at that point, just, he's in Sad Sack Town. Because, you know, his family was seen as devil hunters and, like, monster hunters. And then people were like, well, you know, because you guys exist, you bring more monsters, so fuck that. You're no longer a noble house. Like, get out of here, Belmonts. Mm-hmm. Boo, hiss, whatever. So, like, he's a little broken. His pride's a little broken. The history of his lineage is, like, kind of tarnished. So, like, he doesn't want to jump back into it because he knows of all the, you know, all the ramifications of
Trevor Belmont is definitely on the come up, trying to get to come up.
He's just like, you know, I could help with this, but you guys were all like, devil and monster hunters are bad. So, like,
I'm just going to sit here and drink my beer because not my circus, not my monkeys.
Right? But, you know, of course.
And he's written really well, though.
I agree. I was like, oh my God, I completely understand. Like, I feel you, bro. I understand. You know, and then, I mean, if that doesn't help, you know, then you've got Dracula's son, who's kind of...
Yeah, so you're introduced in the first season to Trevor, like I said, and like Panda said, pretty much at the lowest low point that he could be. You know, his family name has been tarnished. His family home has been almost utterly destroyed. He believes at this point that he is the last Belmont. We know from
plenty of other Castlevania games. I mean, and he's trying very hard not to reveal that he's a Belmont. It's not until the bar fight where, like, they see a sigil on him and they're like, is that the Belmont suit? And he's all like, fuck, you saw it. Okay, I guess we fight now because, yes, it is.
Right. But we're introduced to Trevor Belmont, and then we're also introduced to two other characters that basically become the main protagonists for the series. We're introduced to a magician named Sifia. I want to say the last name is Belnades. She definitely has, you know, some kind of Latin heritage. The voice actor definitely has a Latin tinge on her spoken language. So I don't know if it's Spanish, like Spain Spanish or whatever, but there's definitely that going on. And I love the accent, and I just, because it adds so much character to the character, because she is very much, I don't want to say your plucky, happy spot, but she is definitely the hope in the group.
I mean, with everything that's going on right now, like, she is definitely the brightest, like, oh, that's what optimism looks like in a world full of shit right now. And I mean, it's not the best, but she's like,
and not,
hey, guys,
like, obtuse, oblivious to the things that are going on. Like, she's very aware of all the stuff and how
she's
bad,
like,
those things are.
All this stuff sucks, but someone's got to do something, right?
Right. So for me, like, in the trio, she kind of signifies, like, the hope for things to be better than what they are. You know, Trevor very much is the, you know, I see the world as it is in this present moment, and it's shitty. And then you have Alucard, who we learn through the series, and it's kind of easy to tell when you see him, because everybody refers to him as Dracula's son, and then you see him, and while Dracula very much has what I would say is kind of like the traditional look that we've come to see in our animated Draculas with, you know, very dark raven hair and, you know, dark pale skin and a very,
very
tall,
long
foreboding.
And gangly.
Right.
Kind of, you know, towering. Kind of like that force that you don't want to fuck with.
The Alucard that we meet here in this series has flowing, bright blonde hair and bright eyes and a complexion that, you know, is somewhat pale, but he very much looks like his mother. And it immediately becomes clear when you meet Alucard, which I think is like the third episode of the first season, or towards the end of the second episode.
I want to say it's towards the end of the second, because the Chicky, the magician, and Belmont come across him, and then Belmont's like, we gotta fight!
Right. So it's very clear that, you know, being Dracula's son, the mother was obviously the doctor that was killed and burned at the stake.
You know, and that witch Alucard you got, she was a mom and a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Alucard is a damn fear, meaning that because he's half human, half vampire, he's able to walk in the day, unlike other vampires. And he is conflicted because he knows why his father's doing what he's doing, but he doesn't agree with what his father's doing, you know, wiping out all of humanity, because it's not the right thing to do, and it's not the thing that his mother would want done, and it wouldn't
like
bring
Dad,
her back.
#, not all humans, just some humans.
Right.
Let's get
so, like,
rid
if
of
you
all
just wanted to kill, like, these ones that, like, actually burn mom at the stake,
like
Alucard probably would have been like, I get why you did that, just don't kill, like, all of humanity, okay, Dad? But, like, legit, he's just like, no, I want to wipe out every human on the planet face. And that's pretty much where the first season ends off, is the trio is now together, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to stop Dracula
from
wiping out humanity.
Well,
and this
is
all done in four episodes.
I wonder how that will pan out, because does that also mean that he would, in fact, end up killing his son, since his son is half-human?
Well, I think it's interesting that you brought that up. So right now, I'm going to say spoiler alerts for anybody
who... Oh my god, you're going to be spoiler-alicious this episode. Great.
I am, but I'm doing the alert first, so it's really not spoiler-alicious.
It's not like, hey, by the way,
I didn't spoil it and then went, oops, spoilers. So I'm saying it now.
Okay.
If you are interested at all in this series, or you watched the first season and you weren't aware that second season is available on Netflix right now and you're about to binge it, stop this podcast now, go and binge it, and then come back. But I am about to talk about season two, so if you have not watched it and you want to be surprised it did, don't listen from here on. Okay. Again, you play,
I mean, I'm going to watch it regardless, but I haven't watched it, but that's fine.
Because you're going to watch it, and you're going to love watching it.
I'm immune to spoilers. I still see shit when people tell me stuff anyway.
Yeah,
I'm not.
I shouldn't say that.
I was offended by a Westworld spoiler, but that also came from my mother-in-law.
This is so rude.
That one hurt
so
me.
So anyway, like, I don't spoil Westwood, but I'm going to spoil Castlevania.
Okay,
so here's the deal. So season two ran. Season two, Netflix learned, not four episodes. Didn't completely learn, though. Only doubled it, made it eight. Like, come on, you bastard.
No, I knew,
just give
I knew
me
they were going to do that
a
because
real
they announced
season.
That when they announced just, season two.
I know, but still in my heart of hearts, I was like, couldn't you just, like, eke out, like, two more? Let me feel like I'm getting a real season. Let me feel like I'm getting an album and not an EP.
But that's
okay.
But it's a good EP, though, right?
It's a good EP, though, so, like, I let that go, but I really do want more episodes, because it is very good. So, the second season picks up right where we left off, with the trio trying to figure out how they're going to take down Dracula, and Dracula has summoned his generals to his castle, and is starting to just lay waste to humanity. So you see shots of different people in different towns just shaking in fear in their homes, afraid to go out in the daylight because there's just constant, you know, things that are killing them as soon as dusk happens. So everyone's, like, trying to rebuild their towns and get all their food and stuff during the daylight and then hunkering down at night and trying to keep their windows and doors barred to keep things from entering into their homes and killing them. And we see Dracula just kind of depressed, sitting upon his throne, just like, yeah, no, we're wiping out all the humans, every single human life on the planet. And some of the generals, one of which is voiced by Peter Stormare. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. They amped it up a little bit. I love the character that he plays. He plays one of the generals named Godbrand. And Godbrand's basically like a barbarian Viking like warlord. And he's just a drunkard and likes to fuck a lot of things. And is
like actually like have sexual relations or just
you
like,
don't see it
to waste like which
no he here? Likes to bone again being a barbarian Viking type.
Oh, rape and pillage. Got it.
Rape and pillage and rape, not necessarily in that order.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. Moving on.
And so Godbrand basically is challenging Dracula all the time because he's like, look, like you can't kill all humans because what the fuck are we gonna eat? Like, we need to keep some livestock, okay, and have them be, like, replenishing the livestock. And then we could kill everything else. Like, I'm down to kill everything else, but,
look
like,
him being I need pragmatic. To have some food. Like, look, we could get rid of a lot, but we need our food.
But we need, he's like, look, we can thin the herd of livestock, that's fine, but we still gotta keep some livestock. And Dracula's like, look, I told you, we're killing all these bitches. We already have a whole bunch of shit laid up in the castle, okay, for everybody to eat. And Godbrand's like, I'm tired of eating pig's blood. It gives me the shits. And, like, I just laughed. And I just laughed so hard. Because the way that the line is delivered, plus you're just like, that sounds like a Chipotle moment. I feel you. Like, I love the carnitas, but sometimes I get the shits.
It's like, guys, I got kale chips in the dungeon. I'm sick of kale chips.
Right. Right. So, like, the way that Godbrand is done is kind of like this foil within Dracula's like perfect plan. It's very interesting. They also introduce two generals that are basically Dracula's left and right hand, and they're both humans. But so, they're on board for the whole kill all the humans.
It's like, hey Dracula, we're going to help you kill all those humans, and then at the end you could kill us because we're human, but we're down for the cause. Fuck humans.
Right, but the way that their story is done, because Godbrand's like, and why are we're supposed to be killing the humans, right? Why are we reporting to two fucking humans? What's going on, Dracula? And he's like, don't fucking question me. One, bitch. Two, I told you, these are my most trusted generals, and they have the thing that we lack, which is they are humans, so they know how humans fucking work, how they tick, how they deceive, all their ins and outs and their insecurities, and so they're the perfect ones to come up with the plan for how to destroy all of humanity. So take a step back, bitch. I got this.
They're gonna help us do what we need to do, and then they're dying for the cause like everybody else.
Right. And so the season spends a good amount of time with the kind of inner machinations of everything that's happening with Dracula's side and all the things that are happening with his generals and those that are questioning the plan and those who are just like, fuck it, whatever, I'm down, and why, and their motivations. You get some of the backstory that introduces you to Dracula's left and right hands. I want to say his forge master. One is named Isaac. The other one is named Hector. Hector can basically take corpses and turn them into minions, devil spawn, basically, the things with the wings that go into the cities and rip everybody apart. And Isaac basically has the ability to take a corpse and reanimate it, to ask it questions and learn from it, and then let it pass. So, you know, hugely useful, guys. Isaac is actually African.
Oh.
And Isaac, you learn through his backstory, is really fiercely loyal to Dracula and what Dracula wants to accomplish. And you learn that Hector isn't as loyal because you get to see their backstories as to how they became so broken by humanity itself that they would want to end humanity. Both having good reasons to do it. Hector has always been a alchemist and he's been able to reanimate corpses forever, which weirded out his family, which is why they kind of beat him and tried to kill him and some other things, which is why he was just like, meh, I don't really have, like, any kind of emotional connection to humans because my own parents tried to kill me, so I had to light them on fire.
See, but once again, this seems like one of those kill the bad humans, but not kill the good humans.
Well, you know, define good human. Depending upon who you ask, in the Dracula camp, there's no such thing.
I mean,
there was one, but she got burnt at the stake by her own kind. So fuck them. If they can't even recognize the good ones, there are no good ones. Because the only good one that I know is dead.
I mean, yes, the your logic is far more sound, but it just seems like everyone has a personal grievance.
Right. Like, if you start going down the logic on that side of the camp, okay, that side of the camp, they have a very strong argument. Okay, if you go to the other side, which is the side that's trying not to...
I'm just saying that it seems like everyone has a personal grievance against human 1, 2, 7, 25. And there's like a bunch, there's a bunch of middle humans who are like, I'm just, you know, a farmer trying to get my turnips to grow. I wasn't there when the girl got, you know, burnt. And like, I was against it.
But you didn't go into town and be like, what you did was wrong either. So it was like, you weren't even a conscientious objector. Therefore, you're on the naughty list as far as Dracula's concerned.
Okay, but then you go, but then you play this out because like, what if like, you know, he showed up and he saw like a picket line of like 20 humans who were like, don't kill the lady. She is a doctor. Would he have then been like, look, I won't kill you. I'll make you
probably, but that didn't happen. They were all there with the pitchforks like, yeah, Archbishop, burn the witch. And there was like no proof that she was a witch. They were just like, burn the witch. And so right. Dracula was like, okay,
stop.
Kill
the
humans.
Stop. Where are the facts?
Right. But nobody did that. And therefore, they're now up for reassignment to the dirts. As far as Dracula's concerned.
I feel like Castlevania is this weird allegory about our need right now in our political climate to rise up and speak. Like, if we don't...
Can we not bring politics into this one thing? I'm just so tired of politics. But anyway, you do have a point. Kind of, sort of.
Like, it's
the way
allegory,
that it lines up,
the
timing is very... Okay, so then, on the flip side, you have Belmont... Sophia and Alucard trying to find a way to beat Dracula. Because Alucard says straight up, look, like, Belmont, he's a bitch. I can beat him. That's not a problem. If I could beat Belmont, Belmont absolutely can't beat my dad. Because I tried to beat my dad, and I'm as strong as my dad, and my dad whooped my ass. So we need to find some, like, ancient Chinese secret to beat him. What do we got? And Belmont's like, hey, look, I come from a long line of monster hunters and vampire hunters. Supposedly there's this grand library archive thing at my childhood home. I haven't been back there since I was like 13 because some shit went down. But like, I don't know where it is, but supposedly it's there. And if there's anything like in the world that we know that we could use to defeat Dracula, is probably there, so we should go there. And they're like, all right, fine, fuck it, let's go there. So they travel to the home. They ultimately end up finding what Belmont has always believed most of his life was just a hearthstone, but it actually was a secret magical door into the archive. They make it into the archive, and it was built underneath the castle, and it's just got thousands and thousands of books. So they all go in, and then, of course, the hearthstone reappears behind them, so like, we have no idea how the fuck we're gonna get out, but we're here now, so let's explore this big ass archive. Belmont discovers the family whip of lore, so the whip that we are used to seeing Belmonts use in the game, the red and silver one, that can ignite vampires and whatever the hell it hits, goblins or whatever, on fire when it hits them. So he discovers that whip and he's like, oh man, I gotta play with this. And so he starts playing with it, and starts fucking up all kinds of things in the archive. And he's like, this is probably why I wasn't allowed to play with whips as a child. And you're like, yeah, because you're not good at it. Get good, Scrub.
Yeah, how about you stop? We might need that tome.
Right. So he starts working on that. He and Sophia start getting a little close or whatever. And then Alucard gets a little jealous or whatever.
Oh, God. We do not have time for a love triangle and all this bullshit.
Yeah, it moves really quickly. But there's just like a hint of like, ooh. You can tell that Alucard like thinks a lot and thinks very highly of Sophia while he doesn't really necessarily think very highly of Belmont. So there's a reluctant group mentality that's happening because...
He wants to one-up Belmont so that he looks more ideal. I know what's happening.
Right. So, like, you go through stuff and you start learning more about the characters. And then there's this really cute moment where they're talking about their childhoods all together because they're taking a break. And, you know, Alucard, you know, is going on and on about, you know, how great his parents were and how his dad used to play with him and taught him all these things and all the knowledge of the world and all that kind of stuff and how he doted on his mom and his mom doted and, you know, beloved the father. And then Belmont's like, yeah, I didn't have that experience. I've pretty much been on my own since I was, like, 7, because that's when, like, everybody came and attacked the house and, like, destroyed it and pretty much killed every Belmont that was in the house except for me, because they hit me. And so ever since then, on that day, I've been on my own just trying to figure out how to get through the world and stuff. And Alucard looks and he's like, I'm so sorry. I did not realize that I had more of a childhood than you did. And it's, like, a very real moment. And it's, like, I think the moment where, like, the two of them actually realize, you're actually not a dickhead.
Like, this could work out. I'm sorry that I had a childhood, even though I'm not even fully human. That sucks, bro.
So, like, there's some very interesting, real moments that are then balanced by moments of levity, moments of intrigue, and then, of course, crazy action. Because, again, we're talking about vampires and ghouls and people getting ripped and stuff. It is extremely gory in that people are just often ripped to bits, their throats ripped out, blood everywhere. But not in a way where it feels forced. Like, every fight that happens, every loss that happens, it feels right that it should happen and that you see the right amount of visceral actions happening as opposed to just gore for gore's sake, you know, or dismemberment for dismemberment's sake. So I will say that season 2 is very balanced. I like the pacing of season 2. I would say that, like, anybody who just wants action, 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 action all the time, this is not the series for you, because especially in season 2, they do take time to give you more backstory. Whereas the first 4 episodes really just jumped you in, and it wasn't until you got to the 4th episode that you started to get a little peek into, you know, the history of the Belmonts and why Trevor's traveling alone and why Alucard was set to sleep. And you learn even more the reason why as you get to the end of season 2. But season 2 is paced out well enough to give you critical backstory for characters that you really need the backstory of, that sets the tone and the pace for the story that then comes in the following episodes. And I think that they paced this one out really well. You know, as much as I wanted more episodes, I think that the 8 that they did were the right 8. You know, nothing felt like this episode is way rushed and you put too many things into this episode and it would have been better if you'd split this out into 2. I didn't have that feeling at all watching the second series. So I do feel like it was the right number of episodes to tell this part of the story. What is reaffirming for me is that shortly after season 2 ran and was highly, highly acclaimed and got a lot of viewership, they have renewed it, and so there will be a season 3.
Awesome.
Now, where they go in season 3, I don't know. Now, remember, guys, I told you spoilers, so if you haven't watched this, you should not be listening. Okay, I don't know where they're going in season 3 necessarily. I have a couple of thoughts. Because at the end of this series, Alucard does kill Dracula.
Okay.
And it ends in Alucard's room. Like, Alucard and Dracula are fighting heavily. Like, Trevor and Sophia have basically taken on all the minions and all the generals and pretty much knocked them out. And it's Alucard and Dracula fighting. And they're fighting all the way through the castle. And they end up knocking through a wall that ends up being Alucard's childhood room. And you can see that the room has not been touched. Like, all of his toys were in the places, his bed, his portrait of his parents holding him and all that kind of stuff. And Dracula's, like, literally choking the life out of Alucard and is going to kill him. And then he recognizes where he is. And he stops and he drops Alucard and he starts crying. And he starts speaking to his wife and he's like, what am I doing? I'm killing our son. Can you, how broken am I? He's like, I'm killing our son. I'm killing him. And, like, he starts crying and has this breakdown and he just looks at his son. And it's like, he has this moment of recognition of actually what it is that he's doing and what he's trying to stamp out, and recognizes that it's just that his time is over. That's why he's so depressed. That's why he felt the loss of his wife so deeply, and just looks at his son and is just like, go ahead, do what you gotta do. And so Alucard stakes him And then pushes the stake all the way, and then he, like, disintegrates in his arms, and you can see him just, like, tenderly reaching out to touch his son's face one last time before he disintegrates. And then he does. And so everybody then is like, woo, we won, vampires lost. And
not necessarily, because, I mean, well, Alucard was like, hey, let's not kill all the humans. He was never fully against purging the bad, which doesn't mean that, you know, he might not ascend to this throne and then feel he can now cast that judgment. And then Belmont's going to have to now kill the guy that he's, like, kind of recognized as a
We don't necessarily know, right? Because what ends up happening is, after Dracula dies, we see a couple of things that happen. His left and right human hands are split up. Hector kind of fucked up, and now he's a bitch toy of one of Dracula's former generals that was able to get away. Then we see that Isaac, right before the castle was going to fall, because Isaac was going to defend Dracula till his last death, Dracula used some of the last of his magic to send Isaac through a window to safety. And Isaac has now just decided that actually he doesn't have to serve another master now that the one master he was happy to serve is gone. He's going to take up his mission himself and cleanse humanity from the planet. So you see Isaac off in the desert starting to amass his own army. You see Hector as the bitch toy of another vampire off in another part of the world. So either of those or both of those could be things that are explored in the next season, because Dracula is dead and Dracula's castle can't move anymore. Alucard has decided at the end of this that, you know, he has to watch over all of the treasures and all the knowledge that is in the castle, because if it's to fall in the wrong hands, like, things could happen badly in the world. So he's now decided that the castle is going to be his tomb. Belmont's like, nah, bitch, we're not doing that, because first of all, you're not going to bury yourself. And, like, yeah, you know, your dad did some dumb shit, but, you know, you did what you had to do, and you are a true friend of humanity, and you're my friend. So here's what I'm going to do. Since your castle is literally right on top of the archive of the Belmont treasure trove of knowledge and, like, demon hunting and bullshit, I'm going to bequeath you my manor so you can then become the guardian of all of this and keep out those who shouldn't be in. So live to protect it. Don't die to keep people from it, basically. So he's giving him a reason to live. And he's like, thank you, guys. And then Belmont and Sophia go off and they're, like, hugging on the coach. And Belmont's like, oh, I got the feels, but I'm not going to tell you I got the feels. And Sophia's like, bitch, I know you got the feels. How can you not have the feels for me? So they're riding off into the sunset to go after more adventures and learn more magic and all that kind of shit.
Right, they got to go grind now.
The last scene that we see in the series is Alucard traversing through the castle, seeing visions of his father, and realizing just how alone without his mother and without him there that he must have felt, and gets an understanding of, for like, what drove him nuts. So he goes back to his room, you know, where he killed his father, and sits down in the chair and is just kind of looking around the room. And then I think, and honestly for me, is probably the best emotional scene that I've seen in an anime series in a long time, just begins to break down and have the most human cry about losing his father and also being the thing that took his father from him. And just sobs uncontrollably. Like, I let down a tear. That's how, like, emotional it was. Because it was really shot very well. It's all silent. He doesn't say a word. He just moves around the room and just feels the loss of the life that he had. He sees moments of him as a child running around and playing. And remember coming into the room to see his dad sitting in the room and smiling. And his dad smiling back at him. And then his mom coming. It's just, it's very well done. So I have to say, you know, there's a lot of anime and there's a lot of original content on Netflix that's good. Not necessarily great. Or it's, you know, not necessarily well done, but it's enjoyable. For me, being a slight Castlevania fan, because I'm not a massive Castlevania fan, but I am a slight Castlevania fan. I played a bunch of Castlevania as a child. This series is just really good and very well done. Between the voice acting, the pacing, how good it looks as far as the production goes, and the story that it's trying to tell. You know, when you end in an emotional place, regardless of the medium, if it moves you emotionally, then that's a great piece of art. And I was moved emotionally, so it's a great piece of art for me. So I absolutely love it. I'm thrilled that it's getting a third season. I'm really interested in seeing where this third season's going to go. I don't know if they're going to traipse both of the right hands or not, because all of Dracula's generals, except for the one that got away, is dead. They died. So it's just these, they're left in this right hand that are out in the world. And it'll be interesting to see if they pick that up and keep that going, or if we're going to jump forward in a different part of time where Belmont and Sophia have to come back to Alucard because they've encountered something that they can't manage, and then it's the trio again. Or if it's a completely different Belmont, you know, because, you know, Belmont believing that he was the end of his line, where season two ended off, he and Sophia are basically going off to bone and traveling the world. So it's highly likely that it could be a completely new Belmont, this spawn of Sophia and Trevor, where we pick up. So I don't know where they're going to head for the third season, but I'm ready to see it.
Okay.
That's what I got. What you been playing, Panda?
Okay, so believe it or not, I'm going to cut my section into two because I've watched something and I've played something. So,
Since we're amending. Okay, go ahead.
I kind of want to talk about this movie I saw. It's an animated movie. It's an anime movie called Your Name, which got a lot of acclaim and, like, actually had a box office release over here in America. And I think that because of how successful it was, they're actually planning to do a live action, which I'm a little lenient about. I'm not sure how I feel about that, because we know what happens when America
Didn't KBD do a review of Your Name?
Yes, he did a while ago.
Okay.
But that's I finally caught up and watched it, and I was so spellbound by it. The last time I felt this type of emotional resonance from an anime was the second episode of Ancient Magus Bride.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, like, it just, like, wow. Like, I think there were moments of it that made me feel reminiscent of Ghibli, even though the animation style is not at all like Ghibli. But, like, that earthy, rural, you know, connection to, you know, a town, like,
it community.
It resonated from this movie very early on. I was like, damn, someone really, really cared. Like, you felt the passion and the love and the nurturing of this team when they were drawing this and trying to, you know, put the story together. So, I want to talk a little bit about its plot, but not give away everything, because I definitely think people should watch it. And it's about 107 minutes, so, like, it's
a good feature-length run.
Yeah, it is. So what happens in Your Name is we as the audience, are introduced to two characters. At first, we are introduced to this girl named Mitsuha, and she lives in this rural town out in the Hida region of, like, Japan's mountains. And, like, she's a priestess. Like, her family line, the females in her family have always been shrine maidens. She has a younger sister, and that is their mission in life in this town, is that they are the priestesses of it. They have to uphold their traditions. They do the ancient threading, which I've never been able to pronounce the word for it right. But, like, that is their calling. But she is obviously bored with provincial life, and is seeking the day that she can graduate from high school, and her dream is to go to Tokyo. Like, she's like, I can't wait to graduate because I'm going to Tokyo for school. I'm getting out of here. This will not be my full life, even though I think the way that they structure it, you clearly know that, you know, she takes her priestess role very seriously. So while she says these things, I think she realizes that's probably not going to happen, but she's still going to say those things, sort of. But you see one day that she's just like, I'm so bored with this life. You know, hopefully in my next life, I'll come back as a super hot boy who lives in Japan. And she goes to sleep that night, and she wakes up as a dude. Like, she wakes up as this guy named Taki, who she discovers, like, as she's waking up, because she realizes, you know, she doesn't have her boobies no more. And she's in this really, really tiny room. And she hears this man, an older man, calling out Taki over and over again. You're going to be late. Get up. Get up. You know, and she realizes that she's got male parts and, you know, thinks she's dreaming. Like, this whole time she thinks she's dreaming. And, you know, she puts on the uniform. She sits at the kitchen table with this man who's like, it was your turn to cook breakfast. And, you know, she's like, oh, no. So she quickly makes some rice and some eggs and, you know, stuff. And the man leaves and he's like, you better get on to school. So, like, they never fully disclose if that's, like, Taki's father or maybe an older brother, but they never really say. And she gets lost getting to school. And, like, you see everybody's reactions, like, to Taki acting very feminine. So, like, the way that Taki is sitting and the pronouns and the structure of the sentences he's using. Like, everyone's like, why are you talking like that? Like, why? Because she is very formal because, you know, she kind of has to be, you know, because of her role in her village and stuff like that. So, you know, and she's like, wow, this dream is really, like, really onto me. Like, completely realizes that this is weird. And she manages to get back to her house, her apartment, or rather Taki's apartment, and whatever, and it's just like, I just need this dream to be over. Like, I'm ready for my, you know, for my everyday life. And when she falls back asleep, the next time she wakes up, she's herself. Now, at this point, during the sleep, you're figuring out that Mitsuha and Taki are switching bodies, and it's completely at random. There is nothing that triggers it. Like, it is a very weird, sporadic thing that's happening to both of them. Throughout these days, you kind of see them struggling, trying to figure out, like, if there's any way they could kind of communicate with each other. So they start keeping journals on their phones, respectively. And, you know, like, oh, I went to my job today and someone tried to hit me and I saved my manager. And now my manager was... So they're communicating of what they're doing in each other's bodies when they're not in them. So that they're not losing time. It finally gets to a point where Mitsuha manages to convince this manager at Taki's restaurant to go on a date with him because he's had a crush on her forever. And she was looking forward to going on this date with this girl, which kind of makes me imply that maybe, you know, she was kind of exploring her sexuality a little bit. I'm not sure. Or was doing it in a manner that would allow her to, because, you know, technically she would be a boy at that point. So it's not necessarily, like, verboten or whatever. But that day, it's Taki, and Taki is, like, late for this date, and the date is okay, but at the end of it, the manager, whose name is Mickey, is like, you know, from the beginning, I could tell you had a crush on me, but things have changed now. Like, you're not really into it anymore, and it's probably because of somebody else. And at this point, we as the audience realize that he has developed feelings for Mitsuha, and conversely enough, Mitsuha has also developed feelings for Taki, but at this point, Taki is like, I'm going to call her. Which I, you know, at first when I was watching this movie, I was like, why haven't they just called each other? The minute they were able to figure out who each other was, be like, right. Hey, let me leave my number in the phone and you can just call me and be like, hey, don't touch my boobs while you're in me, okay? Like, they could have just completely circumvented this whole having to communicate this way. When Taki goes to call her phone, Mitsuha's phone number is disconnected and he can't understand why. And, like, he becomes, like, obsessed. And, like, he's like, guys, he's like, there's a situation, and it's really weird, and he's trying to tell his friends, and he's trying to, like, get them to believe him, but, like, it's kind of weird, obviously. And when he starts piecing it together, he realizes that the place, like, because he's in architecture school, so, like, he's trying to get into, like, an architecture firm when he graduates. That's why he's in Tokyo. Because he's been in her town, like, he starts sketching her town, and he's trying to figure out where she is. So that he can go there. Because he's like, her phone's not on, so I'm just going to go to her. And, like, he spends weeks trying to find, you know, evidence of where she is. And when he finally finds it, he finds the town. The town has been blown up. Because there was this comet that was going to be in the sky 3 years ago. And it was at that time, when the comet was here 3 years prior, that a part of it split off. And crashed into her town, killing the entire town of 500, including her.
Mm.
So we've got this cool lake house thing happening, where they've been able to communicate with each other through different periods of time. Yes. So he's 3 years in the future, And she's 3 years in the past, which is why I thought it was really great, because that's why the phones weren't working. And then it just jumps back to her, and you actually find out that, like, the first few times that they were switching, she realized where he was, and she goes to Tokyo to find him. But remember, this is the him that hasn't interacted with her yet. And, like, she tries then to, like, approach him and be like, my name's Mitsuha. Like, try to remember me. Try to remember my name. And, like, literally, it's at this point where they are both trying to figure out if there's any way with this connection that they have, if they can somehow avoid the disaster that's going to happen the night of the comet. And it is beautiful. It is sad. It is, like, that bittersweet sadness that is, it's goodness enriched, and, like, it plants itself in your chest a little bit, and you're like, oh my god, I would love if something like this would ever happen to me and I got lake housed, that, like, someone would be willing to go through these hurdles with me. Because, you know, as the comet is happening, at one point there's this moment of twilight that happens, and they're actually in the same place, and they're able to hear each other in the wind, because they're literally standing at the exact same place. And they're talking, and he's like, you don't make it if we don't do something. You need to talk to your dad. You need to get the people out of the area. Like, get them as far away from this point as possible, or everyone's going to die. And I'm doing this because I love you. And, like these are people who have not actually, like, met, but kind of met, having this deep connection that is, like, this red string of fate. Which, I mean, I kind of believe in the whole red string of fate thing. So, like, I'm so about it. And so I'm like, oh my god, yes, I hope this succeeds. I hope it succeeds. And I don't want to spoil how the ending is, but it's not predictable, is what I want to say. Like, it's not an easy situation what happens. I would sit with it and enjoy the adventure and the whimsy, because it's got so much of that. In terms of quickly, like, I did play a game, which, you know, doesn't often happen. But I've been delving away from Dragon Quest XI because I'm now, like, 140 hours in and I'm still not done. And there's really not much to report on me just getting my trophies for that. But I took a little break and jumped into some Sims-related type games, thanks to the husband playing this wonderful little, you know, nugget of a game called Two Point Hospital, which apparently is the spiritual successor to Theme Hospital, which I've never played. Okay. But literally, you are a no-name person who starts working as an administrator in a hospital, and you ascend the ranks, and then it is up to you to, you know, pretty much run an effective hospital. And, like, you have to, like, map out the rooms and, you know, hire doctors and hire janitors and hire nurses and upgrade your tech and get your doctors learned and keep everybody happy and, oh yeah, keep people from dying. And talk about time management in a way that I really ever thought. Because, I mean, when you play games like The Sims, like, yeah, you want to keep your sim happy. You're just working on one sim, maybe two if they date, and then if they have, like, if they get married and have kids, maybe three. But this is, like, constant, perpetual, people in, people out, monitoring a million and one bars, you know. And, like, you start off, obviously, in a really small, like, hospital that maybe could only fit, like, two or three rooms, depending on how you shape them, and can only do two or three different things. And then as the levels progress, you get much bigger areas that you can expand in, which means you have a lot more treatments that you could be doing, which, you know, you have to be paying attention to. And I'm hooked on it. Like, I'm always just trying to be the most effective. And, like, they actually take appearance into consideration in this game. So, like, you want your patients to feel happy and always have food and have art to look at. And that's where I'm shitty at. Like, I'm on the second level of this game. The third one's opened up, but I didn't want to move to my newer hospital until I'd gotten all the stars, because you want to be a 3-star hospital. Okay. That's when you know you got your shit together. And and literally, I was struggling on this one because they wanted a, like, attractive rate of, like, 65, and I was at 58, and I'm like, what the fuck can I possibly do? People are just like, this hospital's ugly. I'm like, yeah, but my cure rate is, like, 85%. You come to this boring-ass hospital, we treat you for your illness, you live. Like, the death rate is so much lower. We only had one person die. And that's just because they came in with very little health to begin with. because of the disease that they had. And I didn't have the right facility when they walked in. But then I fixed it because I'm a good doctor hospital person. Because I know what the right term for that is. And, like, I'm just constantly, like, being, like, this... all right, I'm going to say this wrong. I want to say omnipotent.
Omniscient.
Like, I'm like God. I'm like this bodiless entity that is just helping people do... I'm God. I'm just hospital God. I do all the things. And, you know, I just quietly sit on my cloud observing everybody and doing the best that I can because I'm hospital God. I'm playing it on Steam, and it's about $35 right now on Steam, and you can play it on a Mac, so Mac, Linux, Windows, you guys can all get in on this, you know, Grey's Anatomy ER experience, if that's what you want to do. And it's cute. I like the animation of it. I like how it looks. Like, it's not too gritty. Like, it's not like blood and gore everywhere, which, I mean, I also wouldn't be upset about either, but I kind of like the approach that they're taking with it. I kind of like how the illnesses are all represented really cool. Like, you know, if you have lightheadedness, your head's like a light bulb or a jack-o'-lantern if you're playing it in October like I am. You know, and, like, you got people who are walking around who look like stars because they think that they're, like, Freddie Mercury and some shit. And then you got some who are just throwing up everywhere because they have verbal diarrhea. Like, it's just pretty... Like, it's the puns are strong. The puns are strong, and I appreciate it. And, I mean, it's very much point and click, like, Spore,
Sims. It's a resource manager.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it's kind of part of what I do in my real life. So I'm like, oh, I have an understanding of this. And then I'm like, actually, I don't. I could not do this in real life in a hospital. No, ma'am. All my hospitals would be boring. There'd be, like, 1 clock. There'd be like bathrooms everywhere. I think my biggest hospital right now has like 6 bathrooms. I'm like, why do I have so many bathrooms? And like my wards are too small.
Sick people gotta pee.
Like people gotta pee, and like I'm trying to get leveled up so I could actually put like a food stand, because right now all I have is like vending machines. And I'm like, people can't live off this shit. Like I'm being so pragmatic about. It's like, I know you guys want
You gotta
food.
Have a cafeteria in your hospital.
Like, I need to be able to give you guys sandwiches. Like, these chips and chocolate bars are not gonna cut it. As a medical professional...
That's how you get diabetes.
I'm making you
or,
right.
Or, you know, verbal diarrhea.
Like, I'm actually surprised that one of my illnesses hasn't been diabetes, and it hasn't been caused directly because of my hospital's food. Because right now, I'm like, it doesn't make sense to
vending
me.
Machines.
Right. Like, up, someone ate a... ate from the hospital, now they have diet beaties or something like that. Like, it could be something, mm-hmm. a play on words or whatever. But it's super fun and very addicting, and I totally see myself playing it the minute we're done with this podcast, and probably this being the thing I do to wean myself off of Dragon Quest. But if you're itching for some time management with some quirky puns, 2 Point Hospital is the game for you.
All right. Well, that sounds actually like a lot of fun, and I'm glad that it's on a Mac. I don't know that I'll be playing it anytime too soon, because I have to stay away from sim games for a little bit, because they become my crack, and
right.
I forget that I have a day job. So I won't be playing it anytime too soon, but we'll definitely make sure that we give you the links to find it on Steam so you can play it on your PC or on your Mac. It's time to wrap up this podcast because we're about done. So if you enjoyed the show, please make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. You can find it on our website, electricsisterhood.com. You see the podcast directory right there on the homepage, so you can check out the entire archive of episodes as well as listen to this one. There are also links on the homepage so you can subscribe to our podcast feed. You can also get our podcast in iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device. Just search for the Eshcast and subscribe. You can also search for Electric Sisterhood and find us that way too. Any way that you recognize us, you'll be able to find us. You can also get our podcast through Stitcher Radio, through Google Podcasts, or on VogNetwork.com, or pretty much through any podcast aggregator on the planet if you search for us. So wherever you want to listen to us, however you want to listen to us, just listen to the podcast and enjoy. Subscribe if you want to get notified as soon as we put new episodes out. on the interwebs every week so that you don't miss a moment of eshness. If you enjoy what we do and you enjoy the content that we create that's on our website, electricsisterhood.com, then please make sure that you check out all the other great content creators that are part of our family of network. That includes our homie KBD, King Baby Duck, over at b3crew.com and his bi-weekly podcast, No Borders, No Race, where he spins a lot of music from some artists that you know and a bunch that you don't, but you probably want to get to know, as well as learn a little bit of Japanese at the same time. You can also check out all of his reviews that he does on manga and anime and comics and video games on his site, b3crew.com. You can also check out our homie Hamsterman2049, streaming live on Twitch every week, every Wednesday at 9 Eastern at twitch.tv/Hamsterman2049. You can check out our Facebook page or his site, smashedrook.com, to find out what he's going to be playing and get the link to check him out. Every Wednesday, like I said, at 9 Eastern. Be sure to do that. And one of my favorite humans on the planet, Phil the Issues Guy, with Phil's Recap and Review, which you can check out on his YouTube channel, and you can subscribe, you can comment, you can click the bell to be notified as soon as he puts out new recaps. I absolutely love his Westworld recaps. You should definitely check them out. But whenever he's doing them, you can be part of the show live, either by calling in or jumping into chat, and check out his archives at his website, issuesprogram.com. And then last but certainly not least, the nerds over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave, whether it's comic books or anime, manga, movies, video games, or more. If it's nerdy and the nerddom is talking about it, then the nerds over at nerdcrave.com are talking about it. So please make sure that you check out all of our sites, that you bookmark them all, share us with your friends, help us become no longer the best-kept secret of the internet. And with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, folks.
Titties.